Welcome to Emotional Sobriety, the next step in recovery with Dr. Alan Berger and Tom Rutledge. When I first got sober, there was the pink cloud that we all talk about. I soon realized that the real work that I had to do in recovery was everything that happened afterwards. And it was, you know, the loosening those unhealthy dependencies and unreasonable demands. And it gave me some marching orders. So we can talk about that. We can talk about what can emotional sobriety offer for newcomers who are just getting their head around, you know, what it means to be not just sober, but recovering.
These things are hiding right in front of our face. We know that. Getting the drugs out is essential, obviously, but it's like lifting the hood of the car so you have access to the engine.
Right. And I'll throw one more thing in there is that, you know, doing this life sober after a long period of, you know, just getting loaded every single day as my program for life, it's like showing up then on that first day without the drugs and alcohol, you feel naked, you know, like there's no interface between me and the world that I can really understand or that feels normal to me. And
it was terrifying for me. I was terrified.
Right. Yeah. And so that's what, you know, was immediately I could kind of see, you know, a candle in the distance when I would talk to Alan and, you know, he would explain these things to me of, you know, like, no, we're going to be inputting a new interface, you know, for your dealing with life on life's terms. And that's what emotional sobriety is, right?
The interesting thing about what happens in early recovery, even though they may happen in early recovery, they continue to unfold or evolve all throughout our recovery. That's why what we're talking about really applies for everyone.
It's our humanness.
Our recovery starts by waking up. Bill Wilson even said it, we must awake or we die. Sometimes it means a physical death, but psychologically, it means that we die, that we live a life that is unfulfilled and that is problematic and very destructive for self and others. But let's talk about that waking up, because that's the first thing, is that coming out of, you know, what Gurdjieff calls a trance, right? That we've been hypnotized.
Yep.
And let's talk about some of the things that hypnotize us. First of all, what makes it so hard to admit that we're powerless? See, that becomes a big, big challenge for everybody coming in the program. And you know, we talk oftentimes about, well, God, it's the ego, right? Which means it's the false self that tells me that if I admit I'm powerless, that there's something really terribly wrong with me. I shouldn't be powerless. I should have control over my life. I think that's our whole society is formed on this declaration of independence. I'm my own person. I can stand on my own two feet. And so this idea that somehow I am powerless, just Bill calls it, our natural instincts cries out against the acceptance of that powerlessness. I don't know if it's a natural instinct, but I do think that there are forces inside of us that do not want us to admit that.
You're getting ready to change value systems. My resistance to being powerless, it's like, what's different about that now? Well, it doesn't mean anything like, you know, subjectively, it doesn't mean anything like it meant when I first heard it and first said it. You know, I was offended by it. Now it's like, okay, you know, because what we know is in our value system, part one, top of the list is we need to get up every day and we need to sort that out. What are the things that I can control and what are the things I am powerless over? You know, and the better job I do of sorting those things, that's where my self-esteem needs to come from.
Well, you're right, Tom, because self-esteem, a big component of self-esteem is this self-efficacy that Nathaniel Brandon talks about, which just means that I have, that my behavior is aligned with reality, that I have an appropriate and honest relationship to what's going on. And boy, you know, you've said many times, which I've also said in my ways, that serenity prayer is really a prayer of emotional sobriety.
Oh, man, it's the core, yeah. It's
the core of it is in terms of being able to sort out those things where I need to, the way I like to think about it is that those things that I cannot change require acceptance. And those things that I can require me to mobilize myself and actively engage. Dr. Murray Bowen calls an active response, actively engage and make contact with reality in a way to do my best to deal with what's going on.
Acceptance is not a punctuation, is not an end. It's you know, and I got this from, I think Brandy's, but I get it directly from Roger Andy's, you know, it's like acceptance is always the first step to change. You know, you can't change something if you don't accept what it is now. And so acceptance is a active thing. It's a powerful thing. It's not a submissive thing.
One of my favorite toxic habits about myself is that's meant ironically, is how mobilizing my energy about that which I can't control, but remaining paralyzed, you know, in the face of that which I can. And that's another aspect of emotional sobriety, right? Is like switching those.
No, that's wires. Beautiful. People need to say that. Let's say that again, because people need to identify with that and understand, because part of what keeps us from getting help is we think we start to realize how crazy we are, and we think we're the only fucking ones. We're not. You know, it's like the idea is, you know, here I am not getting done, you know, basically trying to change things I can, and here's a bunch of stuff, or a few things over here that I can change, and like you said, I'm paralyzed. I'm not doing a thing with those things.
You know, before you said that that was a Roger Andy special, mm-hmm. that the acceptance is just the beginning of something, I knew it was Roger, you know, when you said that. It sounds like something he'd say. Yeah. I always had a thought that, you know, to be strong, you had to have an adversarial relationship with reality. And, you know, you just needed to kind of be bluntly pushing against it. Part of the, you know, the emotional sobriety awakening is that Bruce Lee thing, you know, you need to be water, you need to kind of flow with the contours of life. And that's where you can, you know, get, that's where you can develop your real power.
Well, you can't solve problems from an adversarial perspective. You can. I always tell people you can win battles, and that's what we get into. But it's like to solve problems, there has to be a mutuality. There's a collaboration that goes on. It doesn't mean we agree with each other entirely. It just means we get on the same side and we're both wanting to solve the problem. And it's not adversarial. It may involve even emotions that are difficult. I may still be frustrated or mad at you about something like that, but that doesn't mean I have to be in an adversarial relationship with you.
I mean, I spend a lot of time clearly in, you know, 12-step groups and the kind of central paradox of taking power by relinquishing power. I don't see that ever like represented as acutely, except in rooms of recovery, you know, but it's got broad application.
When we give up the power, what we're really saying is that the way I have been functioning has created this powerlessness. See, I don't think we are powerless, because I think when we accept that what I've been doing doesn't work, that at that moment, see, that's what we talk about is the paradoxical theory of change. It's that moment of clarity that if I keep doing what I'm doing, you know, I'm not going to change. My life is not going to change. This situation that I've created is not going to get any better. And so the minute I can totally admit that and take that into my person and accept that, now I'm open. See, at that point, the way I think about it is the false self loses control. I'm saying that, you know what, the way I put this whole life together and the way I've approached my life just doesn't work. And here's a very glaring example of the problem I have, right? I'm not ready to take on what I love. Ernie Larson calls it the second first step. Isn't that a great way to say it?
I love it. I love that. Yeah.
First step is dealing with my powerlessness over my addiction.
And see, that's the thing to remember. Powerless, people do, they go, oh, I'm powerless. It's like, no, that has an object in that sentence, powerless over your addiction. It's, you know, the serenity prayer is, what am I powerless over? What am I not powerless over? Because it's about energy efficiency. Let's put our energy into things we actually have power.
Well, that's the point about this, is that if I'm an appropriate relationship to reality, meaning the reality of who I am and my limitations, is to accept that I can't do this. Just like the person who has an allergy with strawberries. You don't see somebody that's broke, that has an allergy to strawberries and has experienced breaking out with hives, going back and eating strawberries again. they don't do it. They don't want right. to do that to themselves.
Right.
And this is what's different. Those of us that have alcoholism or other drug addictions, we'll go back and eat the strawberries again.
And oh, again, my God. And the next moment, the next day at least, it's that's like, right. you know.
And see, so when I accept that power, see, that's at that moment, I call it there's a crack in, we're shattering our reliance on our false self. There's a crack and we're starting to be disillusioned with the whole system that we've created to deal with life.
Starting. That crack is a great image. It's like, it's just, I can see it. I can hear it.
You know? Yeah, right? Yeah. It's like that moment we're beginning to disillusion. Like, my God, look at what I've been doing and the mess that it's created in me trying to control something I don't have control over. I mean, I think that that's such an important beginning because, you know, we talk about, you know, what we're doing is for newcomers, but also for people that have been around a while. Later on, we have that same realization about, you know, this emotional dependency and what it's done in our life. And that's the second first step, realizing that the way I have approached life is, you know, the way Fritz Perls calls it is expecting environmental support. The way Christopher Lash said it, I love this statement. I mean, his book, The Culture of Narcissism, is a classic. And in it, he says, we expect too much from life and too little of ourselves.
I read his book based on your recommendation. A very good book. Depressed the hell out of me. It's like that's a heavy book for me anyway. It was tough. It was but it was real. It was real. That's the thing you're talking about.
When you read that book, it is clear that we are a culture, that we are a narcissistic culture.
God, yeah.
And of course it breeds narcissism. Every one of us in this culture is narcissistic, not to the pathological point.
No, on the continuum. Yeah.
On a continuum, we are all narcissistic because we make everything about us. The personal importance of the individual in our culture is so amplified because we need, and capitalism needs consumers. Yeah. Guys, remember the Saturday Night Live skit with the Coneheads?
Yeah, love the Coneheads.
That was such a parody of old capitalism in terms of what it does to people.
Mass consumption. We're going to mass consumption of beverages and snacks.
I got to have the new iPhone. I got to have the new shoes. I've got to have the new Apple. I've got to have, I mean, the obsession. I got to have it. Why do we have new cars coming out every year?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the same thing.
Alan, when you're first explaining, you know, the concept of emotional sobriety to somebody new, it's that dynamic of it's not the drink that led you here to this place. It's the thought before the drink, right? Some version of that.
Well, no, I would say it differently. I'd say emotional sobriety is going to help you learn to get the freedom that you got temporarily and very short-lived when you drank or used.
Yeah.
That was a pseudo-freedom. It was a drug-induced freedom. It was, once again, see, my dependency on the environment to be okay. I needed drugs and including alcohol to feel okay in this world.
It's a beautiful illusion for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, for a minute, man, it was my solution about how I got to okay. When I drank for that moment, that temporary moment that existed, I was free. The problem is when I woke up the next day, I was still Alan. I mean, I just couldn't get away from that until I had the next drink or I used the next joint or I dropped the next pill or whatever it was. Then I got to be free again. What I tell people is we are going to help you find a genuine freedom, a freedom that's based on who you are and not what you use.
Yeah.
Freedom that is generated by your approach to living your life instead of living your life in a way that puts you in jail. You know, you've seen those that when you've seen me give talks, I had that guy that's bars, right? And he's holding the bars and it's zoomed in and you just think he's in jail. Mm-hmm. And then emotional sobriety, the first step is it zooms back and the guy's standing there realizing he's standing there and there's no walls around him and he's holding these bars thinking he's in jail.
Yeah.
And then when we achieve emotional sobriety, we start to let those bars go. We start to let ourselves be free.
It's about panning back. Because if we see a bigger picture, we could see, we have more perspective.
That's right. We get more perspective. We get a greater perspective.
Attaining that freedom by really facing reality, facing who I am and what I'm doing, and then making a set of decisions to maybe disentangle me from some things that are harmful. That is a practice that is challenging to this day, you know, 7 years out from my sobriety date. And it can still be very hard to face myself and very unpleasant. But when I do, and I walk through that, you know, that prickly forest, there's greater freedom on the other side. I mean, the work is never done. You got to just keep going towards it. I thought when you guys were describing this about those last days of my using, you know, where I had to go to an office every day and I couldn't go to the office without being loaded. I just could not face the world, you know, without this mask. And it that had a paradoxical effect. You know, it meant that my life was completely upside down and dysfunctional and a fresh humiliation, you know, every day. The not going to the drugs for my emotional freedom, but to something deeper, you know, has been a lot more, as you can imagine, a better program for living. But it's a challenge.
You said another word that's really important. I'm just picking out words that acceptance is. The word is decision, because we don't focus on that enough with people. It's like we're all responsible to make our own decisions. I wrote a little treatment manual one time back. It might have been the first thing I ever wrote. That I was able to finish because I was sober. It's called The Recovery Decision. You've read some of it, Alan. It's like I wrote it based on the idea that. I'll do this quickly. I had a client that was relapsed, and he'd been through lots of treatment programs, or a few treatment programs, and really the best. I mean, he'd been through Betty Ford, Hazelden. That's when they weren't the same; they were different. And these other programs, it's like. And but in the conversation with him, this was many years ago. Do we do better than this now? I asked him. I said, "Did anybody in any of these programs ask you if you thought you were an alcoholic?" He goes, "No." I said, "That's because they assumed you're an alcoholic and they assumed you know you're an alcoholic." It's like the decision you make about any of these things, and we're talking about drinking and drugging right now, but it can be about any level of this, any, you know, you said the second first step, Alan. I think I'm on the 106th first step, you know, in my life. I love that idea that basically we're facing that powerlessness again. That's what we're doing. We're going back. And I like that because you don't do the steps. You learn how to use the steps. You know, it's like the first step is like, you know, here's how to use a hammer, you know, and we may think it's simple, but I don't know. You guys are probably good at this stuff. I'm not. I can hurt myself with a hammer. It's like because I can't drive a nail or shit. But I know how to use the first step.
You can drive a rhetorical nail.
I can drive a rhetorical anything.
That was good, Patrick.
I need to talk to, or I've just been thinking about it. There's a newcomer, and he's been the way you described it the other day. It's a guy I know, and he had 5 years of continuous sobriety at one point, and then for the last I think 3 years or something, he's only been able to get like a couple weeks here or there, you know, like maybe a month. But like, you know, he was able to stick with it for a while and for the life of him, you know, just can't anymore. And he reminds me so much of me, you know, with the caveat that before my current sobriety date, I hadn't been able to amass any amount of time. This is an example of somebody I think who could really, you know, benefit from, you know, the practice of emotional sobriety.
We're going to keep this going and we'll keep talking about it, but. It's really the understanding that, you know, the old idea was that I have to have all this stuff figured out. And when Bill said that the steps are really to deflate the ego, what he meant was, is that the cultivation and development of humility, and humility, just think of it as just being open-minded, right, is so critical to us discovering new possibilities. And, you know, you've heard me say it many times, Patrick, recovery is the discovery of new possibilities. That's the way I think about it. And one of the discoveries is that a lot of my old ideas do not help me function well in this world. I want ideas that enhance my relationship to myself, to you, to others, to reality, to life itself. And that's what we're exploring. That's what emotional sobriety is all about, is seeing if we can cultivate a whole new set of ways of thinking about and dealing with life that really creates new possibilities for us, that allows us to feel good about ourselves. You know, I love the idea of that, of acting for yourself without being selfish. I mean, my God, what a great goal that would be to set, right, early in our life. That's why people say, you know, I don't know if anybody's ready for emotional sobriety early in recovery. I don't think that's true. In fact, I did a kind of a pilot program up in Monterey, California. And they brought me in to introduce emotional sobriety to the staff, then to the family group, and then to the inpatients. And so part of their curriculum was to add emotional sobriety. Now, Divided Sky is doing that also in Vermont at this point in time. People that are, regardless of the stage of recovery, they're introducing them to it. And what we found was by introducing it to the inpatient, as well as to the family, everybody had a point that where they converged their energies and their focus on recovery. The family saw what role they needed to do in terms of getting emotional sobriety. The inpatient saw it. It reduced the number of relapses significantly.
Yep. And so it's the meeting ground. It's exactly what you're describing. It's where we all come together.
It's where we all come together. And because people started to have tools to deal with their feelings after leaving treatment, you know, and to deal with their emotions and being upset when things didn't go their way and understanding that, my God, that was my expectation. I can actually live my life in a good way where I don't get myself upset all the time if I let go of some of these expectations. What a concept. I never thought of that. Mm-hmm. My thing was, like Tom said, pick up the hammer and try to pound reality.
Right.
I wanted it to be. It didn't work. So this is very important.
That's good.
All right, you guys.
Until next time.
Peace out.